Welcome to Product Decoded, a podcast where we share advice and best practices on how to build and scale great products from the world's top product experts. This podcast is produced by Spiro Ventures and Product Leader Summit. Spiro Ventures is an early stage venture capital firm that is helping entrepreneurs build a future that belongs to everyone. Product Leader Summit's mission is to create a community for product leaders and founders to learn from one another. On today's episode of Product Decoded, our guest is Justin Bauer, VP of Product at Amplitude, interviewed by me, your Product Decoded co-host, Dan Olson. I'm a product consultant and author of the Lean Product Playbook. Thanks so much for listening. Now let's get started. Justin, thanks a lot for taking time to talk with us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Why don't we start off, can you tell us a little bit about Amplitude?
Of course, yeah. So Amplitude is the leading product analytics platform. It's used by over 10,000 companies worldwide to build engaging product experiences and help them grow their overall user base. So we're working with a lot of really cool companies, customers from traditional tech giants like the Microsoft and PayPals of the world to maybe the latest batch of product-led companies like Dropbox and Peloton, helping them ultimately build a better product for their customers.
Sounds great. And then can you tell us a little bit about your role here at Amplitude?
Yeah. So as you mentioned, I'm the VP of product. So I've been with the company for almost 3 years now, oversee product management, design, product marketing, product analytics as well. So overall kind of help us understand what our users want and ultimately help us build a great product for them.
Great. Yeah. And everybody seems to take a different path to product management. So can you tell us a little bit about your career and how you ended up at Amplitude?
Yeah, for sure. And I agree. It feels like every time I talk to another product leader, there's like a different path. That's almost the most common path these days, is a varied path. So for me, it was also the same. I actually started my career in analytics. So I was working for an economic consulting firm called the Brattle Group. And really applying a lot of my coursework in economics and mathematics from undergrad to help understand basically what users would or what people would do. So we used a bunch of discrete choice modeling to actually predict kind of what would happen. And that was pretty cool work that we did there. The traditional path from that would have been to get my PhD in economics, but ultimately decided that I didn't want to do that. I actually wanted to pivot into business. And so went to Stanford Business School and there learned a lot about basically what the world of business was. Got my first taste into basically technology. I had an opportunity to spend a bit of time working with Yahoo and happened to meet a partner at McKinsey who was building up their analytics practice. And so to me, that seemed like a really cool opportunity to learn a bit more about business, kind of extend that business school experience, but still take advantage of my core skill set in analytics. And at McKinsey is actually where I started working in product, which is really random. I don't know.
That's super interesting because most people consulting and product management.
Yeah, exactly. And what ended up happening was I was doing a project. So I did a bunch of pricing work because once again, it involved a lot of data. And we had built this really basic model for the engagement. And typically, the engagement ended, we'd help the client and you do these kind of flybys. 6 months later, you come back, check in with the client, see how things are going. And we checked in with them. They said, this thing you built for us, it no longer works. And we're like, well, it wasn't ever intended to work beyond the project. And they said, well, there's nothing else that does this in the marketplace. And we are really running our business on it now. And luckily, I was with a pretty enterprising partner who said, hey, like, what if we actually built that as actual software for this company and others? And so we raised money internally at McKinsey, and I took 6 months off of the client-facing work that I was doing to actually be the project manager, is what we called it, but ultimately mm-hmm. it was the product manager for this project. And that ended up becoming its own standalone business, and he's now the CEO of that company.
Wow. What's it called?
It's called Periscope Pricing.
Awesome.
Yeah. And from that, I learned that I actually enjoyed the building piece more than the, like, writing PowerPoint slides piece of consulting.
Yeah.
And we started, as McKinsey started getting a lot more requests on, like, how can you help us with our mobile strategy? And kind of, you're not going to figure out mobile with a PowerPoint slide and whiteboard. You figure out, is the customer actually, what's the customer problem that you're solving for? And then you actually build a prototype of it. And you do what we talk about as product management and product development today. But McKinsey wasn't doing that. Mm-hmm. And so ended up joining a small digital consulting company as one of their original founding members. Where we were doing that, working with large companies to actually understand customer problems and prototype with them. And that worked out pretty well. Ended up selling that company, and then I left to start a gaming company. So I was in LA at the time doing that. So that was my first taste at really seeing the full life cycle for product development. Ran that for a couple years, ended up, after we sold that company, coming to Amplitude to solve a problem that I actually experienced at the gaming company, which is basically how can I use data to help make better decisions for my users. Mm-hmm. So I was really passionate about that problem, and luckily met Spencer, the CEO and founder of Amplitude. We hit it off and have been in the company for 3 years since.
Great. Sounds great. And were you the first product manager?
I was. Okay. Yeah. So it was pretty small at the time. It was basically, I think we were around 20 people, 6 or 7 engineers. Mm-hmm. So kind of the first person to come in to lead the product function.
That's awesome. So a lot of fun to be the first one. Cool. Well, since we have, you know, product leader here, I always love to, you know, a lot of our listeners are looking for advice from product leaders. So, you know, are there like one or two pieces of advice in your career that you'd want to share with people that say maybe aren't starting out, aren't where you're at, but kind of mid-level product managers?
Yeah, for sure. So I think by the time you're mid-level, it's, you know, you've built out your kind of toolkit. Like for you now, it's about figuring out what's your super skill or skills going to be. So what are you going to be known for? This is something I actually learned at McKinsey. It's this concept of investing behind your strengths. Mm-hmm. So by this stage, you're kind of going to be well-rounded. And now it's about being best in class in a certain area of product management. And so really thinking about what that is, and then doubling down there. And the nice thing about that is you'll actually be happier when you do that, because you're actually going to learn about the things you're interested in. Mm-hmm. And then the key is then finding great opportunities that take advantage of that skill set. Because product management is a very wide definition of what the skills are. So look for jobs, companies that really value the things that you are going to be the best at. And if you do that, you'll have, I think you'll be much happier in your career. So that's one piece of advice that I give people by the time they're at the mid-stage.
No, I think that's great, because I think a lot of times people focus on the gaps or holes that they have and filling those. And you can either play defense by doing that or play offense by getting better at the things and embracing the things you're good at. It reminds me of Strengths Finder, that mm-hmm. one assessment tool that kind of play to your strengths.
Exactly.
Cool.
Yep. Yeah, for sure. That's even the way we think about building product. I think it's the same way you think about building your career, right? Investing behind the things that really matter. So I think that's definitely one that I work with a lot of PMs on kind of identifying. I think another one is around making sure that you're focusing on the impact of what you release versus what you release. And so don't measure yourself by outputs. That's really a feature factory, right? It's really about measuring by outcomes. And so for us at Amplitude, we actually talk about it as saying you can judge the success and failure of a product team by its 1.1, not its 1.0. The 1.0, sure, is very important. You figure out what to get there, but how quickly do you actually learn and iterate to get towards the outcome that matters? And so be really focused on that. That's a thing that you can own as a product manager in your organization, is ensuring that you're actually driving towards outcomes. And I see younger PMs, they will be very focused on like getting to release, but really getting to release is just a start of the journey. Mm-hmm. It's about how do you learn and ultimately solve the problem of the customer, which your initial release isn't going to necessarily do. Mm-hmm.
No, I think that's great. I think, you know, people summarize it as, you know, outcomes over outputs. I think that's a great saying. And it's funny, as you talk about it, I guess if you're a junior PM, there's so much to learn. I guess it's a bit like you've got to just get through the mechanics of learning how sprints work and release work. And maybe then you can take a step back and have this bigger view of, okay, now I know how to turn the crank. What actual impact is happening when we turn the crank?
Yeah, so I think that's right.
I think that's great advice. Cool. Awesome. And, you know, you're a product leader now, so many of our listeners are product leaders. We run the Product Leader Summit. So what are some of the top things as a product leader? What keeps you up at night? What are some of the top things that you focus on?
Yeah. So number one is always people. Like, people is by far just the number one thing. It doesn't matter how strong your vision is, how great your strategy is. If you don't have great people, then you're not going to be able to scale as a leader. So that's the most important thing. And then the way it works is you still need those pieces, because they kind of work hand in hand. Great people don't want to work with someone who doesn't have a great vision, doesn't know how to set strategy, but you got to start there. And then the nice thing about that was when you start with people is you actually get this nice self-reinforcing loop. If you can attract great people to work with you, that actually starts to attract other great people, because great people want to work with other great people. And so as long as you're really diligent on ensuring that you're building a world-class organization, hiring right talent, making the hard decisions in this instances where maybe you made a mishire, and maintaining that great environment, then everything else will fall in place because you're just going to attract so many great people to that. So I think that's one that when I think of like number one on my list, that's always the number one thing. And we spend a lot of time here at Amplitude on hiring because it's a really important decision in terms of how you scale your company. And then the second piece of that is then how do you empower those great people that you've now hired? And so for me, that's all about autonomy. How can you give, like my personal opinion is that great people really just, they want autonomy to actually accomplish great things. And so can you set a strong vision and align on the outcomes that you want them to drive and then just get out of the way? Because they, if you allow people to do that, they'll do things that you never even thought were possible. And so for me, those are by far the top two things that I think about when I think about what's important as a product leader.
No, that sounds great. And I know everyone here, you know, selecting the right people, finding the right people, recruiting the right people, that's a challenge that a lot of product leaders have. It's a very competitive market. It's very time consuming. It's challenging. Do you have any tips on you know, how to find those rock stars?
So invest early. If you're starting to talk to folks when you open up the rec, then you've already lost. You need to be investing in your network and investing in the community from the beginning such that then when you have an opening, you already have a group of people that you can go and talk to. And they may not be open for a new opportunity at that time, but they'll know other folks. And so then that allows you to actually have a much broader reach than if you're really just being very tactical when you have the opening. So that's the thing that's, I think, really important. Like something that I do, I try to reserve Friday mornings and have a coffee meeting with 1 p.m. Just to chat. And you know, you get introductions to folks, and so I find it's actually not that hard to have access to the network, but I just take the time to just meet with folks who I'm not actively trying to recruit for, but I know that when I do, when I will have an opening, I'll now have some people I can actually go and talk to.
Well, that's interesting. Yeah, so really planning ahead, like long-term versus short-term, great. And then the second point you made on autonomy, I think is excellent. You know, definitely when I've, as a high performer myself and managing people, like that's what I want is autonomy. The interesting thing is, as product managers, people don't report to us. We've got to rely on other people like designers and developers. So how do you, you know, what are some tips or tricks on how to craft as much autonomy as you can for PMs?
Yeah. So I think one is understanding what the roles are. Like that's something that's really important, I think, within organizations. Like what is the role of product? What is the role of design? What is the role of engineering? And making sure everyone understands that. Because sometimes people actually think differently what the role should be. And therefore, then that's when you get into some of these situations where it's unclear who owns what. And if there's lack of clarity on ownership, you can't have full autonomy. Mm-hmm. So that's the first thing that really matters. And so as a product leader, ensuring that you have alignment with your leadership counterparts on that. I think that's number one. And then part of that, one of the things, you know, what does product own then? One of the most important things that we think product owns, obviously product owns the problem. They also own the outcome. And so I talked earlier about like make sure that you're actually not driving for outputs but outcomes. Ensure that you're speaking about outcomes all the time and aligning right with everyone else on what's the outcome we're all trying to drive together. Mm-hmm. So the PM might be the one who decides what the metric is, but it's the PM, designer, engineer together that hits the outcome. Mm-hmm. No individual is going to be the one who can ultimately do it. It has to be the team together. And we found that when you do that, everyone's on the same side. You don't get that finger pointing of, oh, like this release has shipped, like slipped, it's late. It's like, are we delivering for the outcome or not versus that finger pointing. And so that, I think, if you can align with people around those outcomes, right, then all the three will work together, product, design, and engineering.
That sounds great. Cool. So in your time as a product leader, you know, what have you learned and what other advice do you have for other product leaders, would you say?
Yeah, so I think, I mean, one of the things that's, for me, that I've really learned is, especially as you're at a company that's scaling very quickly, is how often processes break and you need to reinvent them. So someone once gave me the advice that things break at threes and tens. So as you move from three people to 10, 10 to 30, 30 to 100, 100 to 300, et cetera. And I've actually found that that's actually mapped pretty well to
like
the experiences.
3X kinda, like every 3X
it's
growth, right?
Basically, yeah, effectively. Yeah. And I've had the luck of being in Amplitude for long enough, I've seen a couple of those, mm-hmm. and I think it actually had played out. And so the thing that we've learned as a leadership team at Amplitude is that means we have to reinvent ourselves many times. And so being open to that and understanding that that's just a job requirement as being a leader at a scaling company is you're going to have to reinvent yourself. And so Like, I'll give one example of that. So setting product strategy, really important thing for a product leader. How you set product strategy when you're 20 people looks very different than when you're 120. When you're 20 people, actually get everyone in the room together, talk about it, align around the problems that you have with your customers. Everyone talks about those problems. They understand them well. And you articulate what the right strategy is, and coming out of the room, everyone's in alignment because you all talked about it. At 120, you can't do that. You can't get everyone in the room. And so one of the things that I've learned is that, at the size that we're at now, it's not just about having the right strategy. Obviously, the right strategy is important. But what's more important is that people understand that strategy and how the work that they're doing actually drives that. Because then they're going to have, once again, autonomy. They have an understanding of what I'm doing day to day, how it's actually going to help the company succeed. And so the tactics you need to do that look very different. That's going to be around repeating yourself a lot. It's probably something I've learned, certainly for myself, is just how often you have to do that. Using every opportunity you have in front of the company to reinforce the strategy. So thinking about all hands as opportunities to do that. So those are some of the things that I've learned for myself, because my job is not just coming up with the right strategy, it's making sure everyone at the company understands that. So we're all marching in the same, basically in the same order.
Yeah, I think that as you get bigger, the communication overhead, the way I hear the story you just said, is the communication overhead goes way up. You can't just get everybody in a room.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. And that's a real problem.
Yeah.
That I think sometimes people underestimate, especially people who maybe have come from a strategy consulting background. So like working at McKinsey, where like all of, my job at McKinsey was coming up with the strategy.
Yes.
But that's just a piece of paper. Like what... For strategy to actually work, people have to actually be using it.
And I think the other thing, it ties back to what you also said before about setting expectations with roles, is as you bring on new people, even forget the number of people, new people, they don't know the last 12, 18 months of being in the trenches and all the stories and things that you and the rest of the team know. So it's like, how do you quickly get them up to speed at the same point of vision that you guys are at? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for sure. I think that's something, like, we just recently hired a director of engineering. And so he obviously wants to understand the strategy, understand the customer problem. And so one of the things that we have to do that is we call them pod charters, but every single pod, that's our kind of organizational framework, creates a charter, and then they refresh it every 6 weeks. And so I can share with him all of the charters so that he, in 30 minutes, can actually get a sense of like what our overall strategy is and what each engineer, designer, and product manager is working on. And so that's an example of something that we would never have done when we were 30 people, but now that we're 130, it's really important.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. Cool. Well, so Amplitude is obviously a leading analytics product, and I know you've spoken with lots of product teams in the process of developing it and marketing it. What are some of the top challenges you see product teams facing when it comes to analytics?
Yeah, so a really common one that we see with almost every company is this concept that we call metric soup. So imagine all of the metrics that you track as a product team. And some of them you think are maybe more important than others, but you don't really know. And in the end, when everything is being measured, you don't actually know what matters. And so really nothing's important. And so it's funny, I'll do this exercise with customers. I'll ask them in 60 seconds to list every metric they track. And it's going to be a list of like 30. And I'm like, well, which of these are the most important for your strategy? A lot of times people don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the place that I really try to dive in when working with other product leaders, is then understanding like what are the ultimate outcomes you're trying to drive, whether that be revenue or a product outcome, and then what are the leading indicators into that, and then what are the input metrics into that. And that's, you can actually start to form a strategy of saying, okay, great, so we're trying to drive this outcome, but we know that this input metric into it is not performing as well. So let's focus in on that and think about what are the problems that exist there. And what we found is that you can probably do the first three layers of this tree on a whiteboard. But once you get beyond that, you actually need to start looking to your data, because it's going to really depend on the features you have, the users that you have, and how they're using them. And so we actually suggest using product analytics to help figure that out. So if one of the things that matters to you is retention, and you're trying to figure out first week retention, then what is the driver of that? What's the most important thing that a user needs to do on their first day that leads them to come back on their second day? And I can throw out a bunch of hypotheses, but the reality is it's going to be specific to your product, because it really is a function of your users and what matters to them, and that could look very different than another product. And so you really need analytics to help uncover that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's funny because it just, I think of a metrics maturity model, analytics maturity model, and it's kind of like we were just talking about the PMs. Level one is we're not tracking our metrics. Let's track as many metrics as we can.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next level is, okay, which of those actually matter, right?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And then, yeah. I really like the maturity model as well, because I see then, yeah, we talk with companies like, first, yeah, track something, now you're tracking. And then the next thing is, can you actually demonstrate you can move the metric?
Mm-hmm.
Because that's actually can be somewhat hard. So proving out that you can say, this metric matters, and we're going to have a concerted 6-week, 12-week, whatever the mm-hmm. period is, and see if we can actually have demonstrable change against that. And then if you can prove that out, then you can move up the next level of the maturity model to actually hold people accountable to that. Can you set a goal against
right.
it?
Set a team against the goal.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's accountability now, because you can say, great, okay, over the next 6 weeks, we're going to move this metric by 15% and be held accountable to it. But first you have to be able to track, know the metrics, be able to change them. And so there is a level to that maturity model.
Yeah, and there's one step between tracking and like and accurately measuring. I call it metrics hygiene. Like, you think you're tracking uniques, or you think you're tracking clicks, but then you look at the numbers and it's like off by a factor of two, and there's some JavaScript error or something.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know.
Yeah, for sure.
Or people don't know what the labels mean. You know what I mean? People don't understand what the metrics
yeah.
are.
Data
like
governance
yeah.
is like a huge problem. That was something that I think when I first joined Amplitude didn't fully appreciate, and something that as we've grown from working with smaller organizations to now working with, you know, very large organizations, tens of thousands of people, we've learned that that problem is really important. That's actually why last year we released a product called Taxonomy around
right.
solving that specific problem, because we think it is so important. Because if you can't trust the metrics, who cares how great our UI looks, how fast our query engine runs? If you don't understand what you're looking at and have trust in that, it's not going to matter.
I remember when your lead engineers just told me the name of the feature, and because I had so much experience with metric hygiene, you knew exactly. I'm like, yes, taxonomy. And like, you clean them up, right? It goes through, it can
yes,
automatically clean
exactly.
up all these labels. Like, one developer instruments an event and he calls it users, another one calls it customers or logins.
It's a huge problem.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very cool. Well, not to get too bogged down in details, but that's interesting. Cool. Any other challenges you see product teams facing with analytics?
Yeah. So I think related to kind of what you talked about, the second one is getting product teams access to the data. I think we still see a lot of organizations where analytics is owned solely by like an analytics org that's very separate from product, and you get this concept of the data breadline, where you're waiting
mm-hmm.
to get a little bit of your data to answer your question. And the reality is that's just way too much friction.
Yeah.
Because then you only will tackle like really important problems. You'll take the time to resource analytics
yeah.
against it. But the reality is product people make decisions every day. And that's the single most important reason, honestly, why I'm at Amplitude, is because I believe that like any moment in time when you make a decision that could have been better informed through data, that's a failure, because the data is there.
Mm-hmm.
It's just about how do we get it in the hands of the people who are actually making those decisions. And that's a big reason why Amplitude exists, is to help companies do that. And so we've been able, luckily, we've seen a lot of companies be able to make better decisions because of using product analytics.
Yeah, no, I've definitely seen, you said like there's an analytics team and there's a silo and people have to submit requests. I want this new report. I need this instrumented. And you've got weeks or months of turnaround time before it actually does, which slows everything down.
Yeah. I mean, it's like product development cycles are moving faster
mm-hmm.
and faster. And it's a pity when analytics
keep
is
up.
The thing that stops that. Like, it's hard enough to actually build features,
right.
but when analytics is slowing you down,
right.
like that's just a failure.
Right. And it goes back to your autonomy point you made earlier. Is like, if you want these teams to be responsible and autonomous, they have to see the data. So
exactly.
great, cool. All right, so for teams that are excited about analytics, they want to get started, but they haven't really done anything in analytics before, what advice would you have for people getting started in analytics?
Yeah, so the first piece of advice is just general piece of advice. Don't boil the ocean. So start small. Prove out something. And so find that one use case that's really important for your business and prove that out. And then through that, you'll actually start to get momentum in your organization to showcase that, hey, we can actually move faster because we have access to this data. And then expand your taxonomy, because, yeah, it takes a lot of time to actually revamp an entire analytics organization. And so start small, prove value, then you'll actually get sponsorship, and then you can actually drive change.
Sounds good. Okay, cool. And then... On the other side, you know, you've obviously interacted with a lot of product teams using analytics. What are the best product teams doing? How are they using it? And what really sets them apart from the rest of the people in your mind?
Yeah. So I was talking to a product leader a couple weeks ago, and he actually had a great analogy that I really liked. He said that there's two types of product people and how they use data. He said there's bakers and short order cooks. And I like that. So think about a baker. They precisely measure things. And short order cooks, though, they'll kind of see what's in the kitchen, kind of decide what to make, right? And so the problem with shorter cooks is that they'll wayfare, they will look for a couple data points, they'll try to validate decisions they've already made using data, and then they won't look for a month or two after that. And the reality is you can get data to tell any story if you massage it in the right way, but are you actually making better decisions for your customer? So we see a lot of people look like that. That's obviously not the right way to use analytics. And then on the baker side, not all bakers are perfect either. So the problem with some bakers is that they may tend to over-engineer and lose sight of the goal. Because analytics is basically a means to an end, right? It's not the end in and of itself. But the best of them, those that can balance exploration as well as validation, those are the model PMs. And those actually use data to inform the product decisions that they're making, not just validate decisions they've already made. So what does that look like in an organization that has like that right baker? What we found is, going back to that metric soup example, they understand their product tree. Like, they understand what are the outcomes they're trying to drive, what are the leading indicators, what are the input metrics to that. And they can really map out their entire customer journey across that. And so analytics helps them understand what are the pinch points, what are the leverage points that they can actually drive. And so analytics helps drive the strategy, not the other way around. And so I'll give an example of what that looks like for a fair number of our customers. So when you build out your tree, almost guaranteed retention will be one of the levers in your tree. And then it's about understanding what drives retention. And so then you'll break retention down into its underlying components. So you have new user retention, so users who first came into your product, and do they return? You have current user retention, users who used your product recently and now have come back. And then resurrected user retention, so users who haven't used it for a while, were dormant, but have now come back into your application. And you'll actually, they will map teams against each of those problem areas to improve them, and then even understand what are the drivers of that. And they'll use analytics to help do that. And then they set goals against that ahead of time. Before they start building, they say, we want to see this improvement, such that then after it's released, they're holding themselves accountable to the goals they set beforehand, not doing this thing where you release, use the data to tell some positive story. And so that's really the science behind this. I think there's obviously an art to product management, but I think the best teams actually understand there's a real science to doing it well. And so we're seeing a lot of companies do that. And it's something, a reason why we focused very heavily on retention, because we know it's one of the most important drivers of success.
No, definitely. I think, it's easy on the thing you just said. It's easy if you don't set the target ahead of time to have a revisionist history and go, oh, we got a 5% improvement. That's awesome, team. Good job. Or ahead of time, they would have wanted 30%.
Exactly. That's so true.
Yeah, and I love retention. I love how he's focused on retention. You know, it's music to my ears, because for me, in my book, Lean Product Playbook, I talk about how retention rate is the ultimate measure of product market fit in my mind. I love how you guys layered it into the three layers of new user versus current versus resurrected. And I just want to make sure, in case you readers, listeners don't know, you guys have put out an awesome ebook on retention called Mastering Retention. Can you tell folks about it?
Yeah, so it was a really big effort for us. We actually spent time working directly with our customers to help them improve their retention. And then based on all the things we learned, actually wrote a 150-page book on that, because we know it's just so important for everyone to do that, that we wanted to just share all the learnings that we had. We've had, I think, over 15,000 people download the playbook. Mm-hmm. I know a lot of companies that actually will do 8-week, basically, workshops where every single week focus on a different chapter mm-hmm. within the playbook. Mm-hmm. And hundreds of companies have improved their retention based on using the book. I think it's been something that I felt really special to be a part of that, because it's been really helpful, I think, for the community.
Yeah, I mean, you know, companies put out all kinds of white papers and ebooks and things like that. And, you know, I'm an author myself, and I would just say I was really impressed by how rigorous it was, and how it was really kind of pushing new ideas and great examples on how to improve retention. So for those of you out there, definitely would go to amplitude.com and download the ebook. actually have a physical copy, which I like, which if you go to one of their events, you can pick up a physical copy maybe. So cool. All right, great. So let's look forward into the future then. How do you see analytics improving in the future, and what are the trends that you're expecting to happen?
Yeah, so I see there's obviously a bunch of trends. I think one area that we're seeing, I mean, on the topic of retention, that I think is an important one, is now as companies have gotten a bit more mature in their product strategy and actually have multiple products, they're trying to understand this concept of network metrics. So you want to understand how to improve retention for your one app, but what's your network retention? And ultimately, what's your network lifetime value? Because in the end, it's about your customer. And you might have multiple products that do that. So like take Atlassian, for example, right? Multiple products that serve a journey for all of us as product people. And it's important for Jira to understand the retention of users in Jira, but it's important for Atlassian to know if people in Jira actually drive more people to Confluence, do they drive more people to other of their products, and overall, what does that network look like? So we've seen that become such an important problem for a lot of organizations that we've actually built out a new product, we actually call it Portfolio, that helps you understand that. It helps you understand what are the journeys that customers take between your products, and give you kind of a single view of what might be so complex of a journey that you don't actually know right now. And so then you can actually measure network retention, other network effects, and basically then make decisions on where should you place bets. Should you actually improve a new user experience in this single application? Because you know that if people onboard there, they're actually more likely to have a higher LTV across all of your products. And so that's something we're really excited about. We've worked very closely with a number of our customers to date, and we'll actually be releasing that in the next month.
So that sounds awesome. I was just saying, like, if you've got a single product, then obviously that's not as big a deal, but more and more companies have multiple products, a portfolio, so I think it's a great name, because I would call it a product portfolio. And yeah, so now I'm, like, envisioning, like, you've got this grid, and, like, if you use product A, how likely are you to use B? And the opposite might be a different number if you go in the other direction.
Exactly.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
A lot of companies just have zero visibility on that, and it's a hard technical challenge to understand how do you actually do the aliasing, the mapping across all of this, which is one of the reasons why I think it wasn't solved before. So we took, but we saw it was so important that we took the time to actually go and do that. So I'm really excited about the impact that that can have.
Great. Any other trends in analytics?
Yeah, for sure. So I think that's something that we're seeing kind of in the forefront. If you start to think much longer term, obviously people talk a ton about machine learning, artificial intelligence, predictive analytics. I think there's a lot of buzz about that, but there is some truth to it. I think the problem is people are overpromising on the capabilities of it. But we see clear applications of that. We have components of that where we've been able to solve real problems in our product, and it's something that we're investing more behind. I think the key here is actually, it's one of my favorite Steve Jobs quotes. It's, you start with the customer experience, and work back to the technology, not the other way around. I think a lot of companies are doing the other way around. And then the other way that we think about this is, actually, Jeff Bezos has a great quote as well, which is focus on the things that don't change. So it's really hard to predict the future, but what won't change? And so when we think about analytics, right, there's a couple of things I guarantee you will not change. No one's ever going to come and say to you, let's use less data to make this decision. Like, that's not going to happen. And no one's ever going to say, give me the answer to that question later. So those are things that we think about. Is like, those are going to be truths 10 years from now. We're going to have a lot more data. And we see that reporting cycles go, you know, 10 years ago, they might have been monthly or quarterly. Now we see weekly, daily. We have companies that do hourly, every minute actually doing reporting. But the manual processes required to actually put together dashboards, to figure out all this stuff, like, that's not going to scale when you need to be actually looking at your metrics minutely. But as product teams are actually being accountable to driving business outcomes, if something breaks, like, those minutes matter.
Especially in e-commerce,
Exactly. And so one of the clear trends that we're building behind is the fact that, like, we can actually tell you when those things happen and actually tell you these are the things you need to be looking at right now, and starting to remove some of that reporting layer that's there. So I think that's an important trend that I think is only going to get stronger, and something that we're investing in right now as Amplitude.
That's awesome, because a lot of times when I talk about analytics, I talk about how if you're not tracking this, you're kind of flying blind, and your team is constantly making decisions and pushing new code and new UI and new messaging, and you could just like completely mess up your metrics with a simple push and not know about it.
You have no clue.
So yeah, you're getting into kind of like proactive monitoring based on analytics, it sounds like.
That's right.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah, so we think that's an important area because you can't wait until someone runs a report to see if this thing broke.
Yep.
There's real money on the line. Like,
so PMs are going to have to wear pagers, it sounds like. When do we get
they might.
Pagers,
they might.
Pager duty. Okay, got it. Cool. Yep. Awesome. That sounds great. Cool. And then, you know, I was looking at your LinkedIn profile and I saw that you recently wrote this post. I love the title, Good Product Team, Bad Product Team. And I thought you had some great points in there. So I thought maybe we could close out. If you could just share some of your thoughts and advice from that article,
yeah,
that'd be great.
For sure. Yeah, it was something that mattered a lot to me because I think the way that we're building product is changing right now. And I think a lot of companies are still stuck in the old way. But to compete with the Facebooks, the Amazons of the world, we as an industry need to all adopt the right way to build products. And so for me, I really wanted to just talk about some of those things. I think one of them that was really important to me is that the product team needs to be the expert in the customer. I think we've talked about that a couple of times here. Like, you cannot rely on proxies and other. It's like you as a product team, that is your job. You are the expert in the customer in the company. That's important to me. It's something that we've really instilled here at Amplitude. I think the second thing is that the product, it really is a continuous learning experience. Like, that's the thing. You're constantly experimenting. It's never done. And if you think about it in that way, then a release is just a moment in time. And so going back to like the concept of measuring a team by its 1.1, right, it's just part of the journey. And I think there's a different mindset when you think about everything you're doing is really an experiment to learn more about what your users want. I think the third one is that, and stuff definitely bothers me a lot, is don't believe that you're actually being iterative and being agile just because you use the word Scrum and Sprint. But actually think about the principles behind it. Go read the manifesto. Not enough people actually like understand the manifesto. The manifesto is right. I do think to some extent, Agile has been a little bit bastardized and become a process. It's a methodology, and it is the right way to think about the problem. But just because you have a 2-week sprint, that doesn't mean you're actually Agile. Are you delivering something to the customer at the end of the sprint? Are you learning on a cycle? That's actually what the sprint's supposed to be about. So I think a lot of teams think they're agile, but really aren't. And the last one is something that we've talked a lot about, which is holding yourself accountable to outcomes. Right, that's the most important thing. Can you actually demonstrate that you're having a real impact on what your customer, on the customer experience, versus just putting out a bunch of features?
I think those last two points go hand in hand because you could have a Scrum team. You know, you're doing Scrum, so you're technically agile, and you're like, look, we're launching 50 points a week. No, but it could be you could be building the wrong thing and driving your metrics down instead of up.
Exactly.
Right? So, and I think again, it's this maturity model. So level one is if you're a new PM, new developer, new designer who doesn't know Scrum, you got to spend a certain amount of time just learning the mechanics, and then you know hopefully you can rise above it and say, well, hey, are we really being incremental? Are we really being iterative?
That's right. And I don't think enough people are going above it.
Yeah, and I think it actually ties back to leadership, right? It's leadership's job to kind of elevate people and make them aware of that. And set those outcomes like and drive that process. So,
yeah, I definitely agree.
Yeah, cool. Awesome, Justin. Well, this has been awesome talking to you about analytics and learning more about your background. Obviously, Amplitude has a lot of great information out there. Can you tell other people where can they find more information if they want to learn more about Amplitude or you or analytics?
Yeah, for sure. So I would definitely recommend checking out our blog. We're really active in sharing a lot of best practices that we see, and we have our customers writing there as well. So the Amplitude, just go to Amplitude and find the blog there. And then in terms of following me, so I think just I'm on Twitter, so at Justin J. Bauer, Twitter is a great place to find me, Medium as well.
Mm-hmm.
And also we have a ton of events, so we try to do events throughout the whole world. Basically every single month, we've got multiple events that we're attending. And so you can actually find those on our website as well.
Yeah, I've been to your events, and we talked about, because I run a meetup, I run a lot of events, Barclays, so we talked about how I went to one of your events. And you, speaking of Agile, had mentioned how you guys had experimented and tried different things and landed on this particular like format of the afternoon with the taco trucks, the food
trucks.
Yeah,
exactly. Yep.
It was awesome. So that was great. Yeah, so I definitely recommend everyone go to amplitude.com, check out the blog, check out the free resources they have there, and also that Mastering Retention book as well. So Justin, thanks a lot for taking time to talk with us today. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Dan. This was great.
Take care.
Thanks to our guests for joining. If you enjoyed this episode of Product Decoded, please take a minute to share it with your colleagues and leave a review on iTunes. This podcast was produced by Spiro Ventures and Product Leader Summit. Learn more at spiro.vc and productleadersummit.com. Thanks for listening to Product Decoded, and we'll see you next time.